All right, welcome back to the Addicted Motors podcast. And if you're listening with your ear holes, well, welcome back to Spotify. This is episode 3 of my little podcast that I started up. We have over 80 listens and maybe 10 subscribers, which is, hey, that's fine. You got to start somewhere, just like YouTube. This is primarily a YouTube channel, but I figure I'd back up a little bit of that visual content with some audio, kind of get into some discussion-based themes and see how this goes. So if you like this format, please subscribe to it or follow the channel and let me know how this is going and what you want to hear, what you want to eventually see. So we've got a little bit of format with the podcast so far. I'm going to try to keep it as conversational as possible, but it's tough when you're just one person. I like to try to incorporate some guests in the future, but schedules and whatnot, it doesn't always pan out to have someone else in the garage for these type of chats. So I wanted to kind of go through some local things first on the agenda, events. So we're based out of the Richmond, Virginia area. It is the 11th of June, depending on when you're listening to this. It's probably live tomorrow. And upcoming this weekend, we've got our coffee and croissants, a little 7 a.m. cars and coffee at Can Can downtown. The theme of the vehicles is always copious amounts of cocaine. So any kind of cool 80s, 90s, or whatever, cocaine era rad vehicles is what we like to line the streets of Richmond with, if possible. Also that morning, we're kind of on the fence of which one we're going to go to is the St. Josephsville Car Show. We've got a couple cars we'd like to try to kind of get out there for sale, which is always a good venue. It's actually one of the best car shows, I think, in Richmond. It's a classic, you know, park in a field type of car show, but every once in a while, there's an F40 or something pretty interesting, a lot of good groups, people, and all the other things that are going on that day usually end up in some type of drive to get there. So it's a pretty good, widespread of every type of interesting vehicle. It's a pretty decent morning. As far as the Land Rover side of things, it's also a Rove work weekend. So going out to the Little George Mar location to cut some trails, do some trail maintenance, and get the campsites prep for the Mid-Atlantic Rally, which will be in, I believe, September this year. So if you're interested in the details for any of these events, hit me up on Instagram or addicted.motors.us@gmail.com. So that's what we have going on. I don't have Mike here, so I don't have anything pressing, major, or new for shop updates. I've only been there a couple times this week, so nothing new on that front. Sales update, well, I've got the 308 behind me. I've been driving around this week, so that's been fun. This 308 GTS 85 QV, 37,000 miles. I think that's three owners, recent timing belt service. Great, wonderful car. Mechanically, very good. I've just been putting some miles on it recently, enjoying this, enjoying the weather and keeping those fluids circulated. So if you're interested in that car, the ad is now live on Facebook reach out to me. And we can discuss pricing and whatnot. I think I have it priced around 82 or something like that, which it's a fairly good car. So let me know about that. Haven't received any emails from anyone as far as what followers are looking for in the podcast, in discussions. You know, I get a lot of emails, and I'm not even joking. I do get a lot of emails about people looking for advice for buying and selling Land Rovers and people showcasing things they might have for sale. Right now, I think I should probably make that a segment too. I have two gentlemen looking for decent LR4s with about a $10,000 or $15,000 budget. And of course, if you've got a low mileage or decent condition L322.2, which is an 07 to 09, let me know. I've got a couple buyers for those as well. YouTube update. Yeah, so go watch my video on Pete's 365 GTB Ferrari Barn Find Rescue. That video is doing okay about his journey. Hopefully he's going to start a YouTube channel documenting the restoration and hopefully the startup of that beauty. It's a 74 Barn Find white prior Saudi Prince owned Ferrari gated six-speed manual 4.4 liter V12. It's gorgeous. It's just like how we do with Rovers, except he's doing it, with Ferrari. So that's a pretty interesting video to check out. And the high mileage 997.1, the 08 that we bought off Carvana auction with 168,000 miles. It's been through the shop, it's been inspected, and it's come back as a good car. I mean, we fixed the steering rack. It was slightly out of play, added a couple of tie rods, did an alignment and an oil change. But other than that, the car really checked out as a healthy car. So that one was as advertised. So that guy's, he's a 911 owner and he's got a good car. We were a little bit worried. And I mean, it felt good when I first drove it, but you really have to put it up on a lift and start poking and prodding and checking things out. After a solid detail, I think that car is going to clean up even better than it already does look, and no one would even realize the mileage on it. So that one, that's another auto auction success for Sports Car Workshop / Addicted Motors. So if you're looking for something interesting, weird, and you want to help us broker an interesting car purchase, let me know. We can help you out with that. Rover's up there. Well, I'll kind of tie that into the this week in cars segment, and I need to get better at how I'm documenting this. But my this week in cars ties directly into the topic for this week's podcast. But I'll go through the list of cars that are my cars that have something going on with them or something we're working with. So the one that hasn't been in any video for a very long time has been my 1996 F-250 Power Stroke Ford. Now, that truck, I'll have a whole episode devoted to that truck. It's been my most expensive car automotive folly purchase, but also my favorite. Recently, it has been sent to a shop. I say shop because I sent it to a gentleman in West Virginia who I've never met. I don't know his name. I don't even think it's a shop. From a guy I met off Facebook Marketplace who recommended his services in transmission rebuilding. And I called him, and he sounded legit on the phone. And his buddy showed up on Sunday last month and picked up my truck, and I paid him $300 to pick it up, and I haven't seen the truck for a month. So who knows? It could be being parted out somewhere in the hills of West Virginia. I have no idea. But apparently the transmission has been rebuilt. It's just waiting to get put back in the truck because this guy only rebuilds them. He doesn't put them back in. His buddy's got a shop, and they do that on the side. So I think $3,800 for an EOD 100, whatever the hell the number is for Ford. Power Stroke transmissions, the automatic four-speed, which again, built in internals and whatnot. I think that's going to be a pretty good deal. Again, I couldn't find one used, a box for under $5,000. So installed $3,800 with some good bits for a guy who seems to know what he's talking about that I don't know his name, West Virginia. That's where that's at. So nothing new there. The C-126, my W-126, my 1990 California special, pillarless coupe. That's, I've been driving it. I still have that driveline, either rear diff or center support bearing issue that I'm just kind of just driving through because it's not getting worse. It's not getting better, and I don't have the money to mess with that yet. I've got some props here, and this was that check pressure valve. It's not a valve. It's just a fuel pressure regulator, I guess. It sits right behind the fuel pumps and the fuel filter in the back of that little bundle in a 126. That has been the issue for my inability to have consistent hot starts. I guess fuel was bleeding back through the system, calling them fuel pressure issues. Who knows? But I've spent over $500 and some replacing things and come to find out just this little $30 bit. So that has been replaced. So if you're ever having hot start issues on a W126 and you've done all the other things, or it's runs okay, but you get inconsistent idling and sputtering and fuel issues that's been sitting, that's your ticket. I do have a bunch of props here. Speaking of the F-250, I'll go back to it. I got the steering wheel for it because my other one is destroyed. The leather and everything has been ripped off and peeled off, and to buy these new, I mean, these are like $300 these days. So I got this off eBay for like 80. We'll see if it's okay. I hope it's the same. This one might be a rubber one out of a van, which is fine. And just, yeah, mine's pitted and broken, and I'll put the cruise control bits on it, and I'll swap that over someday, but that'll be on the project. And it's funny, I've been in accumulation mode. You ever do that? Just accumulate parts for your project cars and hope that one day you'll start putting them on in some, you know, order that makes sense. So that's kind of what I've been doing for a lot of these vehicles. And it's time to kind of cash in on that stuff eventually. L322, nothing. L322 with the BMW down still has been the wife's daily. Knock on wood, the rear backup camera has been flickering in and out, but that's probably just a connection issue. So we'll kind of, I'll wiggle that wire, get that fixed. I could probably use an alignment, but nothing mechanical. Just crossed 177,000 miles being daily driven, and it's still my most reliable vehicle after thousands of dollars. The Classic, no real updates with the Classic either. I cleaned out my drain spouts the other day to prevent it from filling up with water, just something I haven't done recently. So that thing still ticking. I've been putting lawnmowers and stuff in it, using it as a work truck because my truck's been out. And it's been fitting that bill perfectly because there's no interior. My D1, well, the D1 that went to Mar, the 5-speed, it's at the shop because I bent a couple track bars at the last off-road event. So you can just kind of adjust your alignment to get your steering wheel back straight, or we can bend it back. Not the end of the world. That's self-inflicted. But everything else for that truck's been okay. The 911, just been driving it. I've been trying to drive it a little bit more and more. Again, that car's really hasn't needed anything. I've been seeing a lot of other 911s, and it's really inspired me to keep the 911 going and just continue to drive it so it doesn't sit and develop issues. And that is the majority of the fleet. The only one I don't have on the list on there is the BMW 35D, my F15 3-liter straight six turbocharged BMW that's blowing a little bit of white smoke and stuff. That is supposed to be the reliable, powerful daily bruiser that was not going to cost me a lot of money, and that was a hack of I bought the cheapest but most reliable. I don't even want to talk about that car. It's been a complete piece of garbage. It's been in the shop more than I've driven it. And I've heard people say that. I've experienced it, but I've never had that happen to the point where I don't even want it back. I mean, I guess I'll get it back eventually when we fix and find out where the coolant's going, but I don't want to know where it's going. So we're going to skip over that one for now. All right. So a couple other things. I don't want to get into news topics, but I like this one. I like the discussion surrounding the new Grand Tour cast. I think it's Francis Bourgeois, Francis, the train kid from Instagram, right? So I stumbled upon him years ago. I don't know, randomly. Maybe I've got some deep-seated train thing going on. But there's some parallels there. And he popped up recently in a Chris Harris flick where they were kind of racing a train in a convertible. Man, I can't remember what the car was. Maybe it was a... Is it a Mercedes? I don't know. It was something. Porsche. I don't remember what the car was, but the kid, he's a great presenter, and I think he's probably good at the business of Instagram as well. I think he also plays a bit of a character, which is impressive. Even if that is his full real personality, it's still impressive because he's very articulate, and I think will bring a great deal of a different crowd, because his content's universal. Anyone, you have to make content to appeal to all audiences. I think that's how things become universally successful. And I think that's the reason why he's a part of that cast. And sorry, the Throttle House guys, I think they're going to do a great job as well. I think a lot of their stuff's already kind of scripted, and they're funny gentlemen, and they know how to review a car. And they've also been doing it long enough. They can bring a certain level of, I guess, international anonymity and, real world experience to that type of venue. So that's, I'm interested to see where we go with that. I think that's, that seems like a very reasonable group of people. I think the casting people did something correctly, and we'll see if this even pans out. But all right, let's rewind all the way. And there's two topics. And one folds into the other one. We're going to talk about Land Rovers, because I know most of the people here are some type of Land Rover, Range Rover connection. So there's two prompts for this discussion topic. And the first one is the problems with knowing. And the problems with knowing lead to the second one. It's how to wife-proof an old Land Rover. So I think, let's back it up. I bought this D2 for my wife. Right? I bought it, but she likes it, and we're going to make that her hybrid Rover, right, that she can drive to an event and it can do kind of off-road things but still drive home and have air conditioning and all the things that some other trucks have and look cute and do that kind of thing too. And I also like it because it seems like a very good truck. But the problems with knowing how to fix and diagnose things in an old Land Rover, any old vehicle, right? I first applied this mentality to LR3s and L322s because you falsely feel like the purchase is justified because you know how to deal with and how to fix the issues that will inevitably arise with said purchase. Which again, that guise of the problems with of knowing allows you to more easily pull the trigger on said purchase, which then starts a cataclysmic series of events that turns out expensively. If you are a person that doesn't know and your fear of not knowing what the issues are, how to fix them, might provide a clear or provide a bit of gatekeeping to making the initial purchase of said vehicle, which now, with my newly found experience, I am less intimidated by said purchases, so I'm more inclined to make them, which sounds simple and logical, but when you do it repeatedly, it then becomes financially less sustainable. So I bring this up because I did it with the L322. I did it with the LR3, and both those things were, you know, a great learning experience. And I feel very confident in both of those platforms, and now with the Classic, and now with the D1, and the only one I hadn't touched really was the D2. Not that it's all that dissimilar, but there's enough things that are different than in a D2 that would make it a bit of a different beast than a D1 or a Classic, especially when you're sharing parts and components and different things that make swapping and diag and everything very similar on those platforms. Is a little bit different with the D2. So, you know, the goal with the D2 was because I initially drove it and it felt fine and everything was good. It kind of got the, you know, the rose-colored glasses of, oh, this thing's good. And it was good for a little while. But I'm also looking into the lenses. I need my wife to be able to drive this thing without worrying about it breaking down, one. And two, not blowing it up, because then I lose everything. I lose the engine because it would overheat or blow up. I mean, it's creating a challenge that can be fixed with a little bit of diag and a little bit of money. And the way I'm phrasing it like this, because the money adds up slowly. It doesn't add up all at one time. Rovers, they'll always run and drive, but as you start feeling the little things you could do to make it better, or run a little bit better, clean the cosmetics a little better, that tab over the course of time becomes very high. And again, that's why I like to tell people, the most expensive thing you can do in the enthusiast automotive world is keep a vehicle. The most profitable thing you can do is move it along quickly before all the fun little problems arise and you start really kind of dialing in things. So let's talk specific. So the D2, I bought it. It was good. It was Arizona, 176,000 miles. Everything was pretty much functional. It seemed solid. It was solid. I put hundreds of miles on it before I had to do anything. But then as the BMW started messing up and I was kind of transitioning to being able to be used by my wife and the temperatures outside were heating up, the first thing I did was get a ultra gauge. I've always run ultra gauges in all my vehicles that can accommodate them. It's the first thing you do when you buy any OBD2 equipped vehicles. You get an ultra gauge and you monitor your temperatures, because every Rover with a Buick V8 needs three or four things right off the bat, and I broke my rule by not doing it right off the bat. A rule that I've established since I figured out how to do these things is 180 degree thermostat, water pump, flow cooler, water pump, flow cooler, thermostat if it has it, new drive belt, new fan clutch. Those are four things. They don't cost a lot of money. You can get a cheaper water pump. I think the flow cooler one's $150. I think the thermostat, it's either like $50 or for the D2, $100. The belt's $20. And the fan clutch, depending on what model it is, and I've learned there's a few different ones depending on D1, D2. D2, there's two different ones. They're about all the same, the D1 and the Classic. All right, call that $100. So for that little amount of money, you can probably save yourself $5,000 or $3,800 for head gasket, or call it $6,000-$7,000 for a long block engine rebuild replacement. If for some reason the cooling system is failing in a way that you won't realize. And that is, the topic about wife proofing or reliability proofing your drivetrain or the engine of your rover, right? Because with those three things, I was able to reduce my temperatures around town and from the highway by over 20 or 30 degrees in some scenarios. And that's huge, right? That is the difference between, and I'm worried, right? Because who knows how long the previous one was riding around with those temperatures in Arizona, probably, you know, just running those aux fans for, you know, every little bit of sense and power that they could be used for. So how did I come to the conclusion that I would need these things? So it was, again, this is the problem with knowing. It was a coordinated bunch of trips that allowed me to get to that conclusion. Again, in cooler weather, I was running like 195 on the highway. Fast forward to a much warmer trip, I was running 200 to 208 on the highway. And it would run cool around town and it would creep up on the highway. Now, I know what that means and I'll get into that. But at one point, I was going up hills and I was turning off the AC because it was creeping up above 215 or 212 degrees, right? And everything you say, yes, D2s run hotter than D1s. You can, the aux fans kick on at 215, anywhere between that range is acceptable. Just because it's acceptable doesn't mean it's good. And again, I want this thing to last. I want my wife and I want myself to be able to get and use this as a road trip car because it's great. A D2 is great as a road trip car when it's not lifted and it's just stock and I can get 300, 400 miles to a tank. So that's, again, that's the use case and that's what I'm striving to achieve, right? So rewind, that's my scenario. I've got creeping temperatures. I don't like it. All right. That's beyond the parameters of what it should be. First thing I do is thermostat. So 180 degree thermostat. I noticed I need a belt and, you know, let's throw a water pump in there because, oh, that's the other thing. I'm losing coolant. I don't see it. And then one day I get back from the cabin and I'm seeing it visibly drip on the ground. Can't figure out where it's coming from. It took me a second, but since I know what I'm looking for, the water pump's weeping. So there's a little weep hole in the water pump when it starts to fail or excessive movement or bad cavitation or whatever. There's a little weep hole that will start leak coolant and it leaks down like through the pulleys and drops off the front of the engine. And it kind of looks like oil because there's usually oil in the engine and it's brown because whatever. There's always oil in the front of the Land Rover. So it took me a second to figure out what it was, but as soon as I saw it, I knew exactly what I had to do because I've done this before on a Classic. So I'm not going to get into the gory details, but replace the water pump. Actually, not so bad. Easier than the D1 or a Classic. I don't have to do anything with the power steering pump. So I slap that on, slap 180 degree thermostat on. I go to pull the fan clutch. This is an 04 D2. So it's got this one piece fan and clutch, which is annoying because I just bought the fan clutch. So I didn't put on the new fan clutch because this one felt okay. And that's another thing. Just because they feel okay doesn't mean they're okay. The truck was never making that like airplane taking off noise on the highway or in high heat situations where you would normally hear a standard heavy duty fan clutch engage on startup. When the temperatures are warm, when you're climbing hills, you hear the aux fans, you hear the fan clutch, the car will sound like an airplane basically. I'm like, what's that noise? When before I could never really get to engage. So I replaced initially the water pump and the thermostat and some rubber hoses and whatnot. And that around town kept me at one, that 185 with the AC on and the high heat. And I was like, ooh, I'm good. I don't need this. I don't need to spend another, you know, $50 to get this fan. I already had the clutch sitting around. So, you know, I'm there. So fast forward, hot day, take it to the cabin. I'm 164. I'm going 75. The temps are great. They start creeping up again. I'm like, well, I just did all the things, right? What's going on? And yeah, I was creeping up around 203, 206. I mean, it was manageable when I backed down. The slower I went, the more the temps controlled themselves. So that's the point when I realized that I'm not getting proper air flow through the engine and I do need to do the fan clutch. So I just did the fan clutch recently, or today actually, and I think my problem is solved. I can notably hear it engaging. And I think it's going to make a huge difference in the performance and the highway temps. Because again, around town, this isn't spinning that fast. But with me, with the ARB and stuff on the front of that truck, my airflow is already a little bit restricted. So having the fan clutch engage and moving more air through the engine bay, I think I'm going to be good and run those nice 195 to 185 temperatures all over the place. And that's it's a bit of a roundabout way to get to it. But just because I know doesn't mean it's a good idea. What else have I done to that truck, right? Because it's always a slippery slope if you know what you need to replace and do. And my list is long. It's not that well. Belt, water pump, thermostat, coolant hoses, brake pads. I just threw some brake pads on there. Yeah, the rotors are fine. That's not going to do anything. Steering stabilizer. So steering stabilizer, I was getting a lot of movement and crashy driving, which I just equated to maybe there were some HD shocks or springs installed. I started looking around. Everything actually ended up looking original. So I replaced the steering stabilizer. That's the cheapest first thing to do, I think, when you're getting some kind of highway or high-speed turn-related suspension jiggle through your front wheels. I wasn't getting full death wobble. I wasn't running away, but on certain bumps and certain steering angles, you get more vibration through your steering than you'd really need. So the cheapest thing to do first is throw a steering stabilizer on it. I did that. The issue persisted. I inspected all the ball joints, all that. It all looks great under there. So after further inspection, I think I realized that the shocks front and rear are shot. They're leaking or have all leaked out. And that's probably why I'm getting that kind of crashy, unsettled feel over most bumps and things. You know, that truck's had that ARB sitting on hanging on the nose of it for the last 10 years. So that all that extra weight and whatnot has given the truck a bit of a dung beetle profile and has probably worn out that front suspension. So what do I do now? I want to keep this as stock and unmodified as possible because I have trail trucks. I have four other trail trucks for this. I did something which I don't know if I'm going to regret or not. Due to the price of the OME stuff, which is a grand for a 2-inch lift kit, you know, that's springs and shocks, I went and ordered a new Terra Firma shocks that can accommodate up to a 2-inch lift, but they're not super lift shocks. But I think that in conjunction with a 1-inch spring spacer will get me a level profile and enough additional clearance. I mean, it's not going to move it up a lot, but enough to level the truck out and give me just a little bit more so I don't look like I'm completely, you know, bagged out on this thing, and should improve the ride to the point where it's a little more manageable. I think that cost me about $350. I think I'm going to like the way the Terra Firma shocks ride better than the OMEs. I am an OME fan. Aesthetically, I like the yellow on the trucks, but from a functionality standpoint, I haven't driven a truck with a set of OMEs, either medium or HD, that drives smoother than the Terra Firmas. So I'm going to throw these cheaper alternatives on the truck, see if I can level it out and give it a better ride. And the last thing, and this was a big one, again, learning the D2, okay? And this might be more of a thing on other trucks, but I was getting a stinky smell in the cabin, and I've dealt with sunroof drains and interior leaks and cowl leaks and everything under the sun on other trucks, but this one was the one that I didn't want to deal with it on. I couldn't find anything leaking from the exterior to the interior, which led me to the AC drains, and I hadn't been smelling anything, and my car was not stinking in the winter time or the cooler times where you're just running the heat. So that means the only thing that's changed is the addition of excessive amounts of AC condensation. So what I did was I lifted up the passenger side's park carpet, found it was very wet, not good, stinky smell. It went from zero to stinky in like one day, humid temperatures and whatnot, the heat, who knows, it got bad. So I pulled all that up. If it was a trail truck, I'd rip it all out, but this is not. I'm trying to keep this normal. I'm trying to be a good boy with this one. It's tough. What I did was I looked under, and the D2s have little cone-shaped plugs that I think they're supposed to prevent water from going back into the cabin via these drains that are on either side of the transmission tunnel. These were completely clogged, obviously, and I'm sure they weren't ever clogged until Richmond, where all the pollen and stuff collects in the sunroof drains and all over the truck, and it's in the truck and through the intake, and So those things were completely clogged. I pulled both of them out in the passenger side, which had the majority of the water in the floorboard. I probably leaked a gallon of clear water out, which is crazy. The little nipple thing was completely clogged, and I think that's where that issue was. So again, that took about a day to diag and figure out and dry out and everything like that. And this is a truck that's not supposed to be a project truck that I've spent not a whole lot of money. I think probably at this point, 700, I mean, it's a lot of money, but $750 in parts and bits and steering stabilizer and oil change and shocks and brake pads and little bits and bobs here and there, but luckily nothing super major. So again, could all the truck be functional and fine without any of this stuff being done? Yes. But I can't help myself. So I've been playing and plucking and, you know, messing with it. What else? Yeah, so that's the issue, and that's kind of how to wife-proof an old Land Rover, is you need to spend months with it, essentially, before handing it over, right? You go through your punch list. And, you know, I've got the Ultra Gauge in there, and I teach her how to monitor the temperatures and understanding what the ranges are, but I can't give her that information until I baseline the temperatures. So again, that was on me trying to figure that out for the longest time of, and being cheap about it, right? If I just throw in the kitchen sink out to begin with, which is the parts cannon's never the way to go. But in some cases with these old trucks, everything on it is original. Like the shocks are original. That water pump might've been replaced, but everything was original. Even though it looks okay, this fan clutch, it looks brand new. It's heavy when I spin it. It's heavy after I stop the vehicle. It's heavy after it's done turning. It's heavy when it's hot or cold. There's nothing just let me know, besides that I'm not hearing it wail, that it's not functioning as it should. And you're like, oh, I could save a couple bucks and not replace this and that. Every car that's over 25 years old or 20 years old needs everything replaced. And unfortunately, it's really taking the fun and the shine out of things if you're going to keep it and let other people drive it and use it as a normal car. So that's kind of the, you know, the factor here of how to get wife-proof it. You know, you got to put miles on it. You got to put some effort into it. You can't just bring it to a shop either and let them figure it all out, because some of this stuff doesn't rear its head for a while, right? Like the cooling system with my temperatures. They're not going to go drive it for 2 hours on different ambient temperatures on the highway to figure out what those issues are. You know, you got to cut your teeth and figure out that kind of stuff yourself, if you're into it, right? Some people aren't, and that's what, you know, prevents, that is your gate, your barrier, your gateway to ownership some days. But if you enjoy a little bit of struggle and figuring out things yourself, then it's okay. You know, and again, the back to the wife-proof thing, I'm using that, and again, husband-proof, wife-proof. Whoever it is going to be driving it, that may not be the most attentive to your automotive-related niggles, right? Because I feel like, if I hadn't been driving this D2 and opening the hood and checking the coolant levels every time I drove it and got gas and listened to the smells and things just to, you know, because I didn't trust it yet, then nothing would have 100% blown up. That water pump would have continued to leak, probably would have run out of coolant, or would have just idled long enough at some point in time where it overheated and just absolutely melted itself. So, you know, everything's fine until it's not. So that's kind of where I'm coming from there. So again, it just takes time to really break in an older vehicle if you're going to be using it for any type of daily related purposes. And I know I use the Land Rover as the bar there, where I'm kind of doing with all the vehicles that I'm keeping long term, right? My bar is I have to be able to jump in and drive without giving someone the full rundown of what to check and push and listen for and all that little stuff. And it's very expensive. It's not super rewarding. And I hate the fact that my brain is now tuned to have to do that all the time. I wish I was just a little more laissez-faire and able to just ignore certain things. You know, I've done it with the Mercedes. I replaced everything in the Mercedes. And it still needs more things, just so I can have my wife say, oh yeah, you can take that one to work or something. You know, it's those little things, though, that as a car person, I want my cars to be able to be representative of me being knowledgeable enough to say that I'm a car person and, you know, be able to do those things. So yeah, I think that's probably enough on that subject. So just, you know, don't just jump in and drive things. And actually, where I was going with that is I had a we had a bit of a pucker moment, right? My buddy Rob, he's got a Series 3. He's looking for something that's a little more off-road worthy, do longer trips, strut around town, maybe the wife drive, a little more capable. So he's looking at D2s, and I found him one on Facebook. It was in Ohio, rust-free, OME 3-inch lift, diff guards, sliders, ARB, Voyager rack, faded paint, 177,000 miles. He pulled the trigger on it, flew out there, drove back from Ohio, $7,000, fully built truck. You can't build that truck for $7,000. You can buy one for $4,000, and you can spend $10,000 getting it to that point and still have the engine blow up. So you might as well get one that's built and blow your engine up yourself. So he did that. He drove it back. He's like, hey, guys, check out this truck. I just bought it. I'm like, oh, awesome. Congratulations. We'll go check it out and give you a little kind of walk around and make sure this thing's good to go. Bring it to the shop, get inspected, the whole thing. And he's like, oh, no, I'm giving it to my son who's driving it 9 hours to go to Bonnaroo tomorrow. And his son probably has driven cars, but might not be the most attentive to the specific niggly things that are conducive to owning and road tripping an old Land Rover, something that I would probably take a week or so to prep for. And again, the backstory, he is very knowledgeable about Land Rovers, but he did get in and drive the car 8 hours back from Ohio, which it survived and didn't explode, but great. But at that point, you want to give it a rest and do a nice post-purchase inspection to ensure that you made it not by, the skin of your teeth. So I called him. I was like, hey, I will come look at this truck tonight. And that's what we did. We drove over there. We looked everything over. And it was actually in great condition. The water pump was new. The belt was new. I lent him a scan gauge or an ultra gauge. His temps were around 195. His AC wasn't working, so I think that was helping keep the temperatures down. So I'm assuming that that temp might creep up on the highway, especially with the lift and the tires and blah, blah, blah. So mechanically, truck looked really good. It probably needs minor things, but somebody took care of things. And his 99 had an LT230 in it. It was zero rust, had extended brake lines, had extended sensors. There was no check engine light. So great trail truck, great platform. So that truck probably would have made it, or probably is going to make it. I haven't followed up on it with how it did, but all those little boxes were checked and it looked pretty good. The one thing that unfortunately was not disclosed to him is that the guy that sold it to him, he might have just assumed that it had big KO2 tires on it, and he was in the impression that they were new and they were tire shine and they looked okay. If you don't know tires, that's the problem with KO2s and like LTXs and a lot of these popular like 12-ply all-terrain tires is they will dry rot and wear out. They will dry rot before the tread wears out, depending on what your use case is. And that was the case for him. They looked great. They had tire shine. They had great tread. They had little nipples on it. But if you look close in between the tread, very dry rod, date code 11. So those are 15-year-old tires. Granted, they're AT, so he has to replace those with tires anyway. But, it's one of those things where, it could blow out. It won't. They'll be fine. But it's just something to look into. And that's advice for anybody. If you're looking at old cars with decent-looking tires on it, the KO2, they've made it for 20 years almost at this point. So they're old, and they do dry rot fairly easily. So that's 38 minutes. I don't think I have anything else pressing. It's a lot for a solo discussion. Covered a few topics, went over the news a little bit. And that's the update, guys. Again, let me know if you have any questions, Land Rover, non-Land Rover related. Let me know if you like this format. We'll be uploading this probably tonight. Check it out on Spotify. Like I said, I'm doing this in video format, but I'm also doing an audio format because I think it's probably better in audio format. And you drive people over to Spotify from the YouTube channel. So that's going to be it. We'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for watching. Good night.